name them all Muppets. Oh, I was going to like clean out the entire graveyard because I still have like 35 to 40 names I need to deal with. And then there's all these patrons, and then there's all these other people that annoy me on in chat. So, you know, there's like a whole list of people. And I thought about this as like, I could take out so many folks and have all these little scenes. And I really am enjoying writing these little scenes that bind together what people saw versus what happened. So I'm really loving that. Really loving writing this kind of book again. It's fun. But
how's my volume now?
Your volume's good. Your volume's very good. At least for my ears, the chat would have to tell us otherwise. But since when is chat not
live? Your ears were the ones complaining, so, you know, there you are.
Yeah, well, I'm deaf. We know this. Where is Antoine? We don't know.
He's looking up butt stuff.
And on that note, howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I am Paul E. Cooley. Joining me, my wonderful co-host, Veronica Jaguar, and this Terry Mixon guy. What the hell have you two been up to? I almost said three. I was looking at myself. That's a problem. Did I mention I was up late last night? Go ahead, V.
Currently starting a new crochet project because why not? And my house is in the midst of homecoming prep. So I've been assisting with hair and styling and at least no makeup, because nobody wants to wear makeup except me. Yeah. And, you know, getting the prerequisite dirty looks from children because I'm not doing anything right. So it's awesome.
Evidently, we're going to have to come up with a new bingo card. Brett's a crochet podcast. He was not expecting that.
There's some people that do it on Twitch. I just don't have 3 hours to commit to sit and talk while I, you know.
See, looking at those bingo cards.
Naughty, naughty hooker.
I'll buy into that. There's just not enough squares for Veronica happenings on the bingo cards. So there needs to be something about crochet. There needs to be something about her covering her mouth to keep herself from saying something.
The Welshman is asking about our weird traditions.
Okay. So homecoming, at least in the experiences that I have are in the American South. And it may change other places in the U.S., but homecoming...
It's a cotillion.
Not quite. I've been to cotillions. Yeah. But that's a whole other part of my childhood we will not talk about. But homecoming generally happens in conjunction with American football season. And for high schools, there's usually a football game on a Friday. And then Saturday, there is an all-school dance. And depending upon the school, sometimes there's a pep rally. My high school had a bonfire. They had a bonfire and a pep rally. Then they had the football game. And then the day after they had homecoming.
Right.
My kid's school doesn't have a football team because it's an academic school. So they have what they call a spirit week, where there are different themes and the kids dress up to show school spirit. And then on Thursday, they have juniors versus seniors in flag football, which they call powder puff, because the tradition at the school is that the girls, I apologize for the binary, I'm in Florida. I wish I didn't. I'm sorry.
Well, that and you're old.
Pisses me off. So the girls play football and the boys cheerlead, which means that my son, who is a high school senior, left the house in a bright pink crop top and pink mesh booty shorts to go to school and cheer. So, yeah. Yeah, there are no corsages. So we did not do the corsages here. But essentially, it's just...
Matt, it's American football Boxing Day with genders.
That is strikingly accurate. Wow. And there then, you go. Yeah, and then if you do it for universities, it's usually a whole weekend where alumni come back and they have tons of events and dinners and what have you.
Fundraise and try and milk everybody for more money so the president can have another Ferrari in his car and the teachers go without actually getting paid.
So their endowment fund becomes so large that they could do anything, but they don't actually spend it on improving the education of the students.
Correct. We have the other system for that. But be that as it may, apart from our political commentation, so basically what you're telling me is you have all these children that are involved in all these strange, crazy things.
Yes.
And then there's bowling.
And then there's bowling. And I just kind of...
Where it's not appropriate to throw the ball into the crowd, to celebrate?
It is not. And keep in mind, if you tried to do that, at least I know half of the people at the bowling alley where I am, they would try to catch the ball because you're throwing a $200 piece of equipment and finders keepers.
That would be a problem. Press's endowment fund, we're back to naughty hookers.
She's got
the very well-endowed fund should be what it's called.
That's a completely different kind of show.
So, Terry?
I finally caught back up on my writing.
Yay!
I decided that I had to spend 2 days reading everything that I'd written thus far because 3 weeks of not writing means that I said, what the hell was I doing? I have no idea what subplots are taking place. I've forgotten everything I ever knew.
That's wonderful.
But
did you still like what you read?
Yeah, I did. I didn't have to make any changes to it. It's just it's a good thing that I read it through because there were certain things that I was doing that I had forgotten until I read it again. And so I would have, if I hadn't, I'd have picked up writing and suddenly partway through half a dozen cruisers would have disappeared. Where did they go? What happened to them?
That's almost as bad as me lurching through this book and just forget that I have a subplot a quarter done. That would be bad. Fortunately, mm-hmm. I remembered. Fortunately.
Now,
see it. You have the notes back from your editor. Did you have a wormhole here or something
like that? Here, something that that I did have go on is that I have settled on the protagonist for the upcoming series. I've decided what he's going to be and what he's going to do. He's going to be an ex duelist. Someone that once was part of the guild that provided people that fought for the wealthy for money.
William's a bad man.
Yes.
So the duelist is an ex duelist who's still a duelist?
He is not a duelist. He is instead taken to high tech thievery with a group of his own.
All right, perfect.
But one of the things that comes out with writing with Chaney that I didn't find out in time for The Last Hunter is that he likes putting out prequel short stories.
Oh, no.
And so with The Last Hunter, I didn't really have anything that I could toss out there as a prequel short story. This time I'm planning ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and write the story of the events that caused him to cease being a duelist.
That makes sense. Ooh, I like that. Good.
Where his mentor was killed and he could do absolutely nothing to stop it and had to put up with the abuse of the person that hired the one that killed him. So there will be sworn revenge and dishes best served cold and all of that, and that will carry over into the main series when it happens. But now my brain is going, I can do that. And I even posted on Facebook and even in Discord saying, okay, what kind of visual media could I have here of an actor that could portray someone that's, friendly, get along, he's there. But when the switch is flipped, he's a cold-hearted killer. A duelist.
Who did you finally pick?
I haven't picked it yet. Although I have to confess that Michael Keaton is strangely high on my list.
Which Michael Keaton? Be more specific.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton did a role in American Assassin where he was the trainer. The assassin trainer.
Okay.
But if you conglomerate all a bunch of his acting roles together, you can see I'm a friendly guy. I'm a kind of fatherly guy.
I want to make sure
he's not. Kill you.
I want to make sure he's not the sheriff. You know.
No. That was not one of the roles that spelled into my head. But yeah, now that short story is preying on my brain, and I'll probably have to write it when I'm done writing this novel that I'm currently working on, just to get it out of my head.
That sounds like fun.
He's going to be someone that I think the opening sequence of the book is him stealing something for someone else, but while he's there, stealing something else for himself. That's going to lead into this into the finding what he needs.
Okay.
I envision this next series as being Battlestar Galactica meets Mission Impossible.
That has legs. Yeah. That has legs.
It definitely has. It opens things up for additional side characters and people that you can bring in one book and then, you know, let them sit for two books.
It's very episodic compatible. Mm-hmm. Extremely episodic compatible.
When I was looking at pictures of people that I thought might visually represent this, also Orson Welles struck me as a very high potential.
Again, which Orson Welles?
Oh, I only saw one image of him, so I'm not sure, you know, where that falls in the list here.
Are we talking about young Orson Welles, or are we talking about he ate three of Orson Welles?
Somewhere in the middle of that.
Okay. All right.
So not a skinny Orson Welles, but not a fat Orson Welles either.
We're talking about his brief stint when he was directing the Shakespeare Theater, I'm guessing.
Possibly. Like I said, I only saw a picture of him, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I like that.
There is actually a great play about that whole situation where Olivier ended up firing everybody, including Orson Welles, who he had originally hired to be the director of Shakespeare Company. I can't remember the name of the movie now, or the play. Yeah, I think they made it into a movie, but I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, interesting stuff.
Matt says I should think Anthony Hopkins, and yeah, he was one of the ones that was mentioned in the thread. So there's a whole bunch of ones I can get. One that really keeps sticking itself in my mind is I could go back to The Princess Bride and I could take Inigo Montoya, but replace his head with the Mandalorian's head.
Pedro Pascal.
Ooh. Pedro Pascal on...
because of The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm. Why are you cutting up actors? What the fuck is going on
here? I'm sorry.
Here?
Is that your job?
I don't cut up anybody.
But I was thinking, you know, I haven't seen Pedro Pascal doing any fencing, but I can envision, you know, pasting Pedro Pascal's face onto, what is it, Mandy? Maddie?
Manny.
Mandy. And I was like, okay, I could see that. I don't want to get stuck with his accent in there because I don't want Inigo Montoya's accent. That would mess me up.
Frankenstein casting. So Terry's writing or making this movie, and he's not happy with any of the actors. So basically, he's just vivisecting them and putting them back together again in interesting combinations. Gene Wilder.
Antoine has showed up with Frankencasting, which he's correct, but, you know, that is weirdly appropriate when we start talking about butt stuff and transplanting butts.
Hey, that's for the after show. Come on. Come on now.
You're just jumping into it right there.
Anyway, so I've been up to writing quite a bit. You hush, Dean. I finally got the prologue written, most of it. It's only over 15,000 words, so
it's not a prologue. It's a novella.
It's a freaking prequel short story, like Terry was talking about. It just goes to the front of Extinction.
It's a reader magnet, damn it.
Yeah, actually, I think the patrons are going to get this before they get anything else because it's more or less complete. I've still got a little bit of decrunching to do on some of it, and I think there's a scene or two I want to add, but I pretty much got it where it needs to be, which means I've finished that up, which means I'm jumped back into the main plot. So we're at almost 110,000 words, and we're just back into the main plot, and I have at least seven scenes to go each about, or seven chapters, each 2,500 to 3K to go. So this is going to be a big book, and I still have not messed with the subplot, which we never finished talking about during the pre-show, about whether or not I should cut that. But that's another conversation for another time. That's what I've been up to, writing my rear end off, trying to get this book done so I can actually work on something else that might, you know, make me some money while this has to sit aside. So that's basically where I'm at. So now we settle this. I don't have any stories about cockroaches for you this week.
Oh, good. Maybe.
So you finally finished pulling legs out of your coffee maker?
Or did the spiders and lizards finally get to the cockroaches?
So if you didn't see that episode and you want to go take a look at that, you can find it up on our YouTube channel or on my YouTube channel as a short. It's pretty bad. Anyway, we'll move on from that. Basically, I'm horrified and scared to drink coffee, and I'm now very paranoid about what might be hiding in my coffee pot or my coffee cup. We're not here to talk about coffee for once. We are here to basically say...
We're here to answer your questions.
Yeah. As long as they're not things like where babies come from.
Oh, no. They can ask that question if they want to. But we are free to answer those questions however we choose.
And we don't necessarily have to... Yeah, we don't have to tell the truth.
We could lie.
We could lie completely.
You could ask us anything, and we could lie our asses off.
Just try not to be too spoilerific in certain things. Dean asked, did you hear that George R. R. Martin is suing the people behind ChatGPT? Mm-hmm. Yep. And so is John Grisham, and he just joined the suit, and so is a bunch of other interesting people.
Yeah. And it may actually go somewhere. Who knows? You know, it makes me wish, you know, if this works out in the way that it could, you know, if he went ahead and stole all of my Empire books, you know, that's a couple of $1 million that could land in my lap. I could live with that.
Mm. Yeah, I was just looking at one of the lawyers' fees for a class action suit. The class action was for $800 million, and the lawyers' fees are $275 million. And I was just like,
Morgan billboards.
What a racket! What a fucking racket! Hopefully, something will happen, but I doubt we'll ever get any money for that. That's just me. 42, go away. That's too easy, Rick. Come on.
And the question is, what's 6 times 9?
That's right. Uh-oh. We'll get to that in a second. If you are in a writing group, what is one thing that makes it a good writing group? I know we all been in some bad ones, so let's hear about the good ones. Terry, have you ever been in a writing group?
I have never been in a writing group.
V?
I write collaboratively, so maybe?
Not quite the same thing.
It's not. So, yeah, there are a couple in my area that I thought about joining, but people? I mean.
I think that I've only been really in one writing group apart from some university stuff. There's only one thing I've done outside of that. If we're talking about the same thing, which is where you get together, you talk about writing, you read each other's works, and you critique and all that. Mm-hmm. I know what Terry's going to say. Because I mentioned the word critique.
I bet you don't know what I'm going to say, but go ahead.
I probably don't. I think you have to just kind of basically find folks who are a little bit like-minded and don't want to aren't there to eviscerate, are there to try and improve together, and aren't trying to be one up one another. I think in some cases that can be a really difficult group to find once you get over 4 or 5 people. But that's just me. But I would think that a successful writing group would be one where, you know, y'all are basically supporting each other and helping one another out, you know, finding mistakes or something like that, bringing that kind of stuff up, but also, you know, encouraging to go forward and try new stuff and try to write something more difficult. It's basically explore and expand. That's what I would
hope. Constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism. There you go. Mm-hmm. When do we get the $20 Mistress V Patreon?
When we're all not so freaking lazy to start it. I mean, let's be honest.
Is it true that Terry uses ChatGPT to write his novels and he's really an animatronic form controlled by Chuck Tingle from afar?
Actually, I am Chuck Tingle.
I knew it.
I knew it too. You miss naughty hookers, Antoine. That's what you get for showing up late. Sanders says, how do you go about studying describing key parts of a person, place, or objects specifically to give that feeling, vibe, mood, atmosphere you were aiming for?
The thing that I've heard is you do that kind of thing in threes. If you're going to do the description of somebody, mention something like they're short in the conversation. Mention their hair color. Maybe something else about them. That way you don't get carried over with saying too much, but you do mention enough to where it is. But I'm not a good one for mentioning descriptions because, as V will tell you, I'm not very descriptive. I let people fill in the blanks themselves.
Mm.
Well, you... I wouldn't say that you're not good at it. I would say that you have... that the style of your writing presents a framework that other people are... that your imagination can fill in.
Mm-hmm.
And you leave... You trust your readers to fill in the blanks, and you provide enough of that framework so that, you know, they still get a full story. They still get the full experience, but they're allowed to use their imagination. You're not assuming that your reader is stupid.
Basically, I want to put enough for somebody to imagine the details themselves. So I put just enough detail in to where you might have an idea of what a bridge looks like on this ship. But if you ask any two readers, their idea of what that bridge looks like will be two different things.
Right.
Yep.
I would say there's another way to look at this, which is there's, with people anyway, there's three ways to describe them. There's physical characteristics, which is how they move, their face, whatever else. There is their countenance, how they carry themselves. And then there is my favorite, dialogue, how they speak, the kinds of things that they say. If you put all three of those together, you don't have to do one to any excess. You're basically giving a flavor of a full person without having to dive in to psychoanalyze them and give them 50,000 words of backstory. You basically kind of get the gist of who they are. Describe how an actor that might fit this person walks in a certain role that you see them in. Try and describe that swagger, or try and describe those timid steps that they take. Those things are all exterior culminations of their personality. That's not the right word. But they are there, and you can notice them. And you notice them in real life. It's how you take stock of a person that walks into a room. So basically, you're just doing the same thing, but you're twisting it around, and you're doing it from the narrator point of view. And it doesn't seem to make sense sometimes, but that's really what you're talking about. But how a person speaks really says something about their education level. It says a lot about where they're from. And in some cases, it can really tell you about what they're thinking, obviously. So that's a very powerful piece. I think Terry does that without trying to do it. And I think that there are other pieces like that that make sense. If you're trying to describe a place, I say it has the same three pieces. It has this physical description, and it talks. A place talks if it matters. A place is either home or it's a tomb, or it's somewhere in the between. It feels uncomfortable. It has its own presence. And if, as long as you think of any place as a haunted house, but not haunted in the sense of the horror, but that it carries around maybe the life force of the folks who are in there. You know, what kind of place is it? Do you think a slave ship gives off the same vibe as the Star Trek universe? Probably not. How would you change the descriptions of that? Is the ship clean? Or is it dirty? Is it damaged? Is it pristine? There's all these different things that go into that. And that really describes about even the people who are on the ship. So, and that gives a certain atmosphere to it.
And from just to tag on to that, when you're describing something from a single character's point of view, their interpretation and their experience is going to, you know, change the description of where they are. You could have the, you know, the XO of that prison ship describe the ship in one way, and it can have, you know, it can have one sentiment for them. And then you turn around next chapter, there's a prisoner and they're describing it. It may have a totally different vibe. And yeah. So that, you know, balancing that, to, you know, keeping POV in mind.
And that filters the world through the lens of the character, which gives us more insight into the character without you even having to do a damn thing, really. You just need to basically describe it from their point of view. There's so many ways, so many tricks that we use, especially in horror and suspense, to make this happen, because we need that claustrophobia, or we need that sense that time is running out, or we need the sense that the monster is around the corner. And so we have to use these little tricks with light, with shadow, with sound, with everything else, just like you would in those kinds of movies, to kind of keep the pages rolling and to keep you wondering what the hell is going to happen to the character. Brett says, sometimes, though, you can under-describe. I started a book today that did not mention main character was black until third chapter.
Well, that I think depending upon the author, that's another thing. You know, every one of us picks up a book and we have our defaults, kind of like what we are going to assume a character is like. And as an author, you know, it's if there is something important about a character, like if a character's race or ethnicity or cultural background, if that is paramount and central to that character in that book, don't hide it until, like, you know, the third or fourth or fifth chapter. And if it's something that's going to affect how they speak, describe it early, or for the love of God, give your narrator a heads up. Anyway,
I can see somebody burying the hook like that if they were trying to make a point too. I would find that a little jarring, though.
It's been a long time since I've actually read Starship Troopers the book, and if that is actually true, I think it was intentional, because it sounds like the kind of thing Heinlein would do. Subvert the expectations of the readership. Let them think it's somebody like a white person all the way through.
Yeah, and we don't even
going,
find
no, that
out.
Hero that you were just reading, he was black. Suck it!
Or in the case of, he was Brazilian in Starship Troopers, if I remember correctly, right? Because Rio was his home.
I believe so, but I honestly don't remember them mentioning his skin color, but if they did,
no.
It was intentional.
I don't remember them mentioning it either. Regardless, that could probably be done better. If you could write without any financial considerations, i.e. just for you, how would what you write change?
It wouldn't. Not one little bit.
Sorry.
Part of me is thinking, like, so does that mean you're going to give me money to create space so I make more time to write so I can do more? Or, you know, not and do something else? Because I got a whole laundry list of things I would throw money at to give myself more time so that I could expand and write more. But... for me, I have stories, and my stories almost always start with a character. I have a really cool character idea, and that character has a story, and I have to figure out how to tell that story. And I would likely put more time into... probably like fantasy epic, not with elves and stuff. That's not my jam. At least to write, but more ship travels a la Stardust. So kind of the epic ship journeys, and kind of like the Age of Clipper ships and whatnot. And I'd probably sit and write more romance, but it's right now I write what my group wants to write and what is flowing. And I write the solo project I work on is what I think is going to carry and sell better. And selfishly, it's what I know I can narrate.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, he's changed the question. If you didn't have to worry about money or audience, or if the book sells, what's the story you want to tell?
Obviously, I would write a book that stalks Paul throughout the days of his lives and his meaningless existence.
What would you really do?
Actually, I wouldn't change a thing. I'd still be writing the
exact same thing. That's what I was going to say. I didn't really think that anything would change.
Yeah, it's not that I wouldn't write what I'm writing now. It's that I would... The financial considerations, honestly, I would be able to shove off other responsibilities and obligations so that I'd have more time. I mean, honestly, for those who have or have had teenagers, they are hella expensive to insure when it comes to cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason why I drive and deal with transportation so much is because at the end of the day, it costs less than trying to insure a 17-year-old boy while I have a 20-year-old boy on the insurance. So it's like, yeah.
I would write more Garaga. I would get Crusaders. Awesome. I would get Crusaders or Garaga kicked out. I would do that fucker, because that would take place over three different Crusades, all fighting for the same thing, which is something. If you've read Daemons of Garaga, and use your brain cell, you probably know what it is that is stored away in Jerusalem and that everybody fucking wants, including the popes. Well, the Pope, the anti-Pope, the Garaga Pope. Did you know there's a Garaga Pope? Anyway, I would go back and I would get that done, and I would get the story of Colette during the French Revolution. So that would be a Children of Garaga set against the French Revolution. I think that would be just a fucking kick in the ass fun. Just absolutely ridiculously fun. Especially if she gave the Marquis de Sade a lesson or two in bondage and sex. Anyway, that notwithstanding.
I have a flip around question then. I want to know what the audience would pay us to write if they had unlimited funds and could tempt us with whatever the dollar amount would be. What would you have each of us write?
Ooh. That's frightening.
That's a good question.
I would pay Terry to write a paranormal romance.
And I could do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think
I tried to write horror and it turned into a paranormal.
That's romance. Why I didn't say horror. I said, I figured we might as well just say fuck it and go for what you can do as opposed to what I want you to do.
Yeah, sorry, Paul. I would just pay you to write Garaga. I mean,
I have no problem with that. I love to write more Garaga. I mean, I am going to write more Garaga. It's coming. It is coming. It's just I would go back and write more historical Garaga.
I would pay Veronica to write magic girl fiction.
There might be fan. There is there is fan fiction somewhere on the internet that none of y'all will find. Because way back in the day, I may or may not have run a Sailor Moon fan fiction site. But you know what? It's not a far cry from writing superheroes.
It's not.
It's not. Mine just get really angsty and then, you know.
They're teenagers. If you set them up as teenagers, they're going to be angsty. That kind of goes to the territories.
Well, up Terry, I mean.
Where do I send money to? Do they have a buy me a coffee or something like that where I can tip? I can send a tip for blowing up Terry?
I do not have one, unfortunately. But the story is in the Echo One anthology. So.
Rick says Terry and Paul should write a dark fantasy together.
I could totally see this is like, you know, a Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman kind of, you know, balance here.
My favorite tale about those two bozos is they asked Gaiman who wrote which parts, and he said, you would be surprised which one of us wrote the horror parts and which one of us wrote the comedy parts.
Nope. I would not be surprised.
They're both capable of running over one another, so wasn't really a problem. Thinking of paying Paul to write a horror story starring the Golden Girls taking on an apocalyptic beastie that nobody knows exists. I know you've seen Bubba Hotep. This sounds like a very Joe R. Lansdale kind of story to me. And I think I actually could try and pull that off with them at an old folks' home in a small town in rural Texas. That'd be some funny-ass shit.
At the very end, the epilogue is, thank you for being a friend.
Steel Magnolias with just old biddies and a monster. Instead of cancer, we have a monster running around. There will be no more Oscar stories. Brett says, I would pay V to write a mystery in a male strip club. Wow! That has legs.
No.
That has legs. Legs.
It has some other body parts, too.
I wasn't going there, but okay. Since you mentioned them. JR says, Terry Mixon, the Commander Jared Mertz saga without the pretense of the princess.
Another alternate universe?
Yet another one?
I would go ahead and write that, but he would be inept and incompetent at everything he tried. Just because.
A nonfiction book about writing.
That sounds boring.
You know, I always...
Dead Robot's Guide.
I think about posting essays about certain writing things when I've come across them and this, that, and the other. And I always go back to the same thing. Who the fuck made me God to tell you how to write? So it seems kind of pointless, even though I'm giving advice. It's like, what is my advice really worth to somebody trying to get through some of this stuff? Because you can talk about it in generalities, but without actually being able to put it down on the page and show what you're talking about, it sometimes just comes meaningless. Jared Mertz fanfic.
See, I would spite you and write Jared Mertz flashback. That's what I would do.
There you go.
And it would be awful.
Jared wants me to write a true Space Marine story without the horror elements. Have you met me? Brett says Terry needs to be paid to write cat stories, like a revamped T.S. Eliot thing. Yes! Oh, God, why haven't you never read T.S.? I bet you never read T.S. Eliot, have you?
I have read some T.S. Eliot.
Have you?
I don't know that I've read the cat stories, though.
Go watch the original. No, don't watch the movie. That is a horrible, horrible, horrible creation that, you know, even Andrew Lloyd Webber said that, like, it should never have existed. Go watch a recording of the actual musical. It's one of those musicals where there's no talking. It is all singing and dancing, but the makeup is amazing. The dancing is amazing. And the staging of just like how people are cats. It's cool. I enjoy it.
That's okay. I intend in my next series to have a cat as a POV character.
Yes.
A monster romance novel.
You know,
Lady Gaga wrote a song called Monster Romance. Wasn't it? Wasn't it
Bad Romance?
No, Bad Romance, Terry.
Bad Romance.
You're such a boomer.
her fans are called Little Monsters. Her monsters. Oh. So.
I don't know. I could see myself do well. But here's the thing. I would say the Garaga series counts.
No. I would actually say it's, no. I think it trends more toward paranormal romance than monster romance. Monster romance and alien romance really rely upon the gross physical differentiation between the human and non-human entities. Whereas at least with Daemons of Garaga, you have two more or less human-ish entities. And there's a component where they might shift and take on
other attributes or whatever. I get what you're saying. So in other words, they've lived most of their lives as humans as opposed to living their lives as monsters.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. That makes sense.
She wrote there's a book out there called Monster Romance that's by Lady Gaga. So maybe that's where I got the thing. I posted
a
link to it.
Called?
Look in private chat and look at the book. I didn't actually look to see who the author was of this. No, somebody else wrote it, but there you are. Somebody's already written the Monster Romance that
it's
I would have
an official biography.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
This is too frightening for words. Hey, get the fuck a xenomorph.
You got to pay extra for that.
That's the name of that's the title of the book. This is awful. Here we go. I would like to read a Terry Mason comedy of errors, either in a sci-fi or paranormal setting.
I'm not sure I could do to it.
I don't know. One of the things I always play around with is snagging one of Shakespeare's plays and using it as inspiration and throwing it into, you know, a paranormal or a sci-fi setting. Because a lot of those plays, they're very, very easily shifted into different settings. You just, you know, the story itself works. Like I need more projects.
We all need more projects because none of us have enough.
I know.
Babaverse-like story. I wish I was that talented. That was a hell of a series of books. Terry's take on a Mission Impossible-like series, which I think sounds to me like he's getting on there.
Yeah.
Matt, how in the hell do you do that? Pay someone to finish my current book in an enjoyable way. It's about SQL query optimization and using AI for data prediction. Oh, boy. Yikes. Veronica inverting a slew of fairy tales and mythology into something cool and new.
I would, except that's almost what a lot of paranormal romance authors do. They take fairy tales and then, you know, twist them around. And it's an interesting idea, but it's not a new one. So there are other people who are doing it better than I am, and truly I'll just wait and try to narrate the book. One of the authors that I've narrated for is currently working on a retelling of Goldilocks that I think is going to turn into a reverse harem. So
why in the fuck? What? Say that again? I'm not judging. I'm asking a question here. Goldilocks and the Three Bears, but she ends up with all three bears as her subs. Is that what we're talking about here?
I don't know the dynamic of, you know, of hierarchy. All that I know is that was one of the ideas that was tossed around. And, you know, if it takes a while for a girl to find what's just right, more power to her.
Jesus.
What? Okay.
Nothing. Michelle says it's a cool idea, Veronica. I just saw The Tempest, which was so interesting. Prospero cast as a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my absolute favorite Shakespeare plays is Much Ado About Nothing. And I think I've seen no less than four different interpretations of it, not counting the one I was actually in college. And my favorite was the Royal Shakespeare Company's one where they reimagined, I'm sorry, I just went Midwest. They reimagined it in like the British Royal Navy. And they had David Tennant and Catherine Tate as Benedict and Beatrice. And it was brilliant. It was awesome. They drew golf carts everywhere, and it was part of the shtick.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I got nothing. I'm going to ignore some of these commercials.
You mean some of the comments?
Commercials, comments, whatever. I'm trying to read.
All of the Mistress V stuff, y'all know my pseudonym. I have put it in the Discord.
Crazy.
So, and a lot of that stuff I've done is royalty share. So help a girl out and go buy a book. You'll enjoy it. I promise.
Great fapping material, I'm sure.
I do not kink shame. However you want to enjoy the book, enjoy the book.
Enjoy the book. I wasn't kink shaming.
I wasn't either. I'm just saying whatever people want to go.
I was making plans. Anyway.
Well, everybody needs to have weekend plans.
Yeah, everybody's going to have goals. Captain and Commander in Space. I've never read those books.
Isn't that Master and Commander?
Yeah.
Master. Anyway.
Same
deal. It could be Masturbator and Commander if it was.
That's a totally different book. When Hell Freezes Over, that's when we're hosting the DRS Anthology.
Again, with what time and funds and, you know.
Sanity.
Even writing short stories isn't a good use of my time. So where would I come up with the time to do more than just write one?
Master and Sub and Commander in Space.
Masturbator and Sub Commander?
Oh,
I see.
Oh, boy. I'm just going to shut up. There are some things I just do not need to say in public.
Save it for the after show.
Holy shit. I don't even think I'd say that during the after show. Holy crow. Sometimes my brain goes to places where I'm like, why? Usually it's because Terry sends me there.
Because you're an author. That's
well, that too. Toilet Shark versus Savage Walrus. I'm sure that'll be on...
I am
sci-fi any day now. Oh. Terry will be doing a new lit RPG series since the Amazon thing wasn't great. Vella. That's what it was called.
Vella.
I was 3/4 of the way done with that as a novel, so I'll eventually at some point finish it, but it's not high on my list of things to do. I'm barely eking out enough extra time to write an Empire of Bones book right now.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. That's kind of always the problem we do have. So we talked about the bread and butter stuff. It's like I got to get the black out as quickly as possible because that's the moneymaker out of everything else. And that changes how I need to write stuff and where I need to schedule and everything else. And it's a pain in the ass because, like I said, there are other things I want to write. And guess what? I will be writing them, but I got to get these other things done first. Michelle says, is there a writer that you'd love to know was reading your work, or is there a writer that you'd love to meet?
David Weber.
I knew it. I
have met David Weber. Mm-hmm. I've had dinner with him and his wife in a big table with like 8 or 10 people on it. So it wasn't just like an intimate dinner. But I did sit directly next to him at a place and have dinner with him and have met him multiple times. But I would love to know that he read my work. I did give him my Imperial Marines book. Probably didn't read it, but that's fine.
Probably not. Yeah, that part doesn't really matter.
It really doesn't.
V, what about you?
I mean, for me, it's less about who's reading what I write than who's listening to what I do. And for the longest time, I mean, I had like a list of narrators who I was like, oh my gosh, he's amazing, she's amazing. But I've been able to work with these people as part of the Professional Audiobook Narrators Association. And now like they have my phone number and I have theirs and I get texts and I fangirl so hard. And then it's like, oh, yeah, sorry about the meeting. No problem. Take care. See you tomorrow. And so I'm less concerned with bigger names like reading or listening, I just want to get hired and work. It's more, I would rather have, like, I had this happen earlier this week. I had an acquaintance message me and say, hey, I just finished listening to this one book you narrated. When's the next one coming out? I love this author now. And I went, I'm starting that book this month. She's like, oh, well, I'm just going to go get it on Kindle. But as I'm reading it, I'm going to hear your voice as I do. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So I'd rather know that more people are finding the book. It doesn't matter how famous or big somebody is, because who knows? In, 6 months, either one of y'all's faces could be up on, the Amazon bestseller list or what have you. I'm like, I know who they are. You never know.
I know who they are. I used to run with a better class of people, but this is what I'm reduced to. I would love to hang out with Peter F. Hamilton and talk about the future of humanity. I would love to hang out with him and talk about all of that in the context of artificial intelligence leading to sentient intelligence, his idea of Eden with transhumanism there. I think that was one of the most interesting universes I've ever been plopped into. And I really dig his work. And I would love to just basically be able to pick his brain over a couple scotches and just talk, about the stuff that he's obviously very passionate about, which is a lot of the stuff I'm very, very passionate about. I think, I love his work a lot, and it influenced a lot of the Derelict Saga, for better or worse. But I would love to hang out with and have a chat with him. As far as anybody reading my work, how would I know? Brett says, how about authors you would not ever want to meet?
Now, I'm not going to mention any names because that's not kosher. But yeah, there have been some authors that have done things in public that are such D-bags that I would not want to meet.
Likewise. Yeah. There are certain people that have presented themselves online in such a manner that I'd be polite, but I'd find another spot to be, because nowadays there, and I don't fault people for this because I'm one of them, there are a lot of people who will stop, reading or listening to or watching something because of the actions of an author or an actor or someone else involved with the show. And if I don't want to sit and have coffee with you, I don't want to be around you. And I'll be nice, but I'll go find somebody I like to go have coffee with.
I can't imagine wanting to hang out. Well, there was one author who I was forced to hang out with that I really did not want to be around at all. And that had to do with something that person did. And I'm not going to name names either. But was far more popular at the time than I think he deserved to be. And on top of that, he was an arrogant prick. He basically told his audience to go fuck itself. So fuck him. I do not want to ever hang out with him again. Just because of the attitude and everything else that came out with it. It's just not somebody I'd be friends with. No, Rick. They have any problems with you. Oh, blah, 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 blah. For you are high on coffee. Where was it? I lost it. There we go. What IP would you like to write in?
Ooh, there's a tough, there's a good question.
That is a good question. That is a really good question.
What? JR, you had a good question? What the heck?
Even a stop clock is right twice a day.
You were going to say that.
So probably going along the lines of the whole magical girl thing, because that really is like part of where my heart is. I would kill for like some like She-Ra spinoff sort of deal. That that, like that magical girl-esque sort of thing. As much as I enjoy Star Trek and there's so much out there, I would be terrified to get something wrong and have a million angry fans yelling at me in Klingon because I could not handle it. What?
What about you, Terry? Is there an IP you'd like to write in?
Right now, I'm waiting for the cat fight to start behind me.
Terry's going to write Animorphs.
I think that there are a couple of ones that I would like to write in. I'd like to write in David Weber's Honor Harrington universe. I think that would be pretty fun. But there's some lit RPG properties that I think are pretty awesome that I wouldn't mind writing some stuff in there as well. I'll never get around to doing it, but it would be fun. If I had to pick a movie or television property, I think I should write a Mission Impossible story.
That was actually brought up earlier. Yeah, I heard that. I thought it was you blowing your nose, but you were talking at the same time.
Nope. Sassy's got a fluffy tail.
Oh, here we go.
Don't you mess with that old lady. Girl, she gonna get you.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's right. That's right, you whippersnapper. Stay out of my house.
Don't what IP you, would right, I like talking. To write in? God, that's such a great question. The first one that jumps to mind is the Alien universe. I had a lot of fun with Station 3 and An Ancient Trap because it was kind of like a mix between Weyland-Yutani and whatever the corporation is in Resident Evil. God, I've lost my mind. I would love to write in that kind of universe again and have some new ideas on how to incorporate the politic and everything else. It was something I would not have thought about until I read the books by Alex White and Scott Sigler because they were just so goddamn good. So I would love to write in those. JR says Terry needs to refresh his insults. He can do better. Yes, yeah. But consider what he's, you know, are you really worth it?
Another IP that I could write in is I could write in JR's universe and do it better.
Wanted to read The Black in New York. I'm going to assume you mean The Black smashing in New York. I could be wrong. The Chat Cop podcast became the Cat podcast. Yes. Mortal Feline Combat. Umbrella. Thank you, Matt. I can't believe. Now, this is the scariest thing I have read all day. Just write a She-Ra spinoff.
I am still upset.
Make it a reverse harem. Make it a reverse harem.
Okay, clearly you have not seen the glorious queering of the series that happened when it was rebooted.
Queering?
It is.
Did they camp it up?
Yeah. There's a singing pirate. I mean.
Oh, no.
Obviously, I need to go ahead and write a
hockey horse.
What is it? I need to write some Red Sonja.
Actually, I'm surprised you haven't written a goddamn fucking Conan the Barbarian book, to be honest. I'm surprised you haven't done one yet.
That would be kind of fun.
I'm surprised you haven't done one yet. Yeah, I'm sure that would be kind of fun. I don't know that I would ever go that far, but the Garaga universe certainly does allow me to flip to any time in history that I want to go to, which is awesome. Because I have a lot of stories that I can tell in that universe and want to tell. A lot of history I want to cover. The Black cleans up New York. Yeah, right. Like that's going to happen.
Yeah, the rats would kill it. What are you talking about?
Oh, no.
You'd go down the sewers and then you just hear the crunch, crunch. What little bit of skeletons are left. And everything's pristine except for all these little bits. And then, you know, you start to hear, you know, your love keeps lifting me higher, but it's not the pink sludge, it's the black, and it just keeps coming up and starting to move and dance. And then it starts to animate.
Look.
Obviously, what I need to write is I need to go ahead and write a black ripoff so that it could be, like you say, neon pink. and then have it do all kinds of rude things. You know, I think I could do that. It doesn't eat things. It just, you know, uses tentacles to penetrate things. That's what it does.
Well, if you have a comment about Terry penetrating things, you can send an email to show at DebrahBotsSociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at Paul_E_Cooley at VYRC.social. You can find us on Facebook at listeners of the Deborah Bot Society Facebook page where Terry mangles all the madness. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/DRS podcast. See way too damn many cats. Involve yourself in chat and, you know, hang out with the community. You can find us on YouTube every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. The pink and sparkly. I don't like you, Matt. And if you want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to exclusive live shows like the one that's about to happen in about 10 minutes, where we go after dark and things get a little spicy.
Sadly, V will not be joining us.
Yeah, so it's going to be a sausage fest. You've been prepared. You've been warned. And at the $10 level, you get your name read, and our $10 patrons are Tony L. Joy, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our $10 patrons and all of our patrons in general for making this show possible.
Banger and lips we will continue in the theme of having you ask us things, and you could get a little bit more risque. Maybe you could go ask Paul about, you know, when exactly he gets to wear his tutu out in public.
I have those pictures.
Now, I want you to imagine for a moment me wearing that red dress with that tutu.
All right.